You're listening to Crossroads International Church podcast. Welcome. We hope this podcast will bless you from wherever you're listening to it. For more information, go to our website at xrgs.nl. And now, let's get into the podcast.
Good morning, everyone. It is so good to be with you. We are in the middle of a sermon series we're calling God's Story. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope it's good. And that it is a blessing to you all. We are slowly making progress. We are saying we want to remind ourselves of the story of God as it unfolds in human history, in the pages of the Bible, and ultimately in the life of Jesus Christ. And so we're looking from Genesis to Revelation, and we're working our way all the way through to the book of Revelation, reminding ourselves for two reasons. Number one, so that in this telling of God's story, we can come to a deeper and greater understanding of the nature and character of our God, first of all. And secondly, to remind ourselves of our place, our role in God's story. And so we have covered in the first couple of weeks, we looked at creation. The next couple of weeks, we looked at the fall. And today we're starting the next chapter in our God story. You remember we left the story off last week at a low point. You remember we introduced that phrase, East of Eden. So where we read about Cain living in no man's land, east of Eden, that east of Eden, so symbolic of what then happened as Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden and just all the generations subsequent to that just rooted in their kind of a declaration of independence, a sinfulness, saying, God, we're going to be the God of our own story, the center of our own story. We will decide what is good and evil. We will define it for ourselves. We're not going to settle for being in the image of God, but we want to be God. And so the consequence of that, we just see so far last week in the chapters of Genesis, those early chapters, just the further east of Eden they go, sin multiplies. And you get all these individuals gathering together with selfish motives in our hearts. And as we get together as groups in society, we see this individual sin becoming structures and systems of sin, just demonstrating themselves, showing themselves in all kinds of abuse of power and slavery and racism and exploitation. And we see what's happening. People are suffering. Evil is increasing. Sin is multiplying. And we see just death and destruction just growing the further east of Eden we go. And so we left the story where God allowed the peoples, the nations of the earth to be scattered after the events of the Tower of Babel. Do you remember that? So this is where we pick the story up. I said to you last week, but the story takes a bit of a turn now. So evil has increased, the cycles of sin is just magnified. And God said, this cannot be, something must be done. Evil is just out of control. And so he scatters the nations of the earth. But we know the nature and character of God, that question of God to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, where are you? Just echoes through the generations. The pursuing love of God, pursuing lost sons and daughters, God not giving up on the crown of his glory, his image bearers, where are you? And so God shifts his focus a little bit. And God said, okay, right, what I'm going to do, let me find one person. Let me find somebody. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to make my own nation. I'm going to start again. I'm going to find somebody. I'm going to make a new nation. And this nation will just be blessed. And this nation will be the light to other nations. And I'm going to use this nation to fulfill my original longing and heart to bring all people to me. And so this part of the story, we introduce Abram, where God comes and he finds Abram and he speaks to him. In Genesis 12, verse 1, the Lord had said to Abram, Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. Has God found a person that will become a people? Has God found a partner who will carry in his heart, God's heart, for the lost nations that have rebelled and gone their own way and build a new people, a redeemed community, a beautiful community that will be an example to the other peoples of the earth of who God is, what it means to follow him? Has God found somebody that will partner with him? So God speaks his words to Abraham, and Abraham responds. He says, yes. I mean, I've wondered, and about you, why would he just leave? He hears this voice to leave everything that he knows and loves, and he goes. He says, yes. There must have been something about that voice, that presence, that was so intriguing, so compelling, so inviting, so loving, that he couldn't help but say yes. And I think some of us here, many of us here, will understand that. That voice, that presence, that call to give our lives to him, to surrender our all to God. I think we understand maybe something that must have gone on in the heart of Abram at that time. God, I'm not sure what this all means or how this is going to go, but there's just something about being with you in your presence that's so compelling, so intriguing. I can't but help and say, here's my life. I give it to you. And I think this is maybe what was going on with Abram. And he says, okay, God, I'm in. Here we go. This voice also carried with it this calling, a beautiful promise. That's why we were singing about promises of God. Let me read it for us in Genesis 12, verse 2 to 3. And so God speaks to him now. He says, right, here's what's going to happen. I will make you into a great nation. And I will bless you. And I will make your name great. And you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Here we have this incredible moment. I want us to not miss what's happening now here. The incredible, awesome creator of the universe, mighty God, is calling a nomad wandering farmer to be his partner. Calling him out of his little story into God's incredible story. A new plot that will ultimately change the destiny of nations. I want us to notice here that the calling and the promise that God gives to Abraham is an extension or a reformulating, if you will, of God's heart all along. What he wanted from Adam and Eve. God still longs for his image bearers to extend the boundaries of Eden, the kingdom of heaven, to be his partners, to be in relationship with him. And God's doing the same thing here again. And so in many ways, we can say, if you will, in many ways, Abram now is kind of a new Adam in many ways. Let me try with Adam and the same promise, the same commission, the same mission, the same promises I give to you. And God says, let's go, let's do this. Can I just make a quick side note here, just from a theological perspective. And so God changes his tactic, and he now focuses on a person and then a people. Now, Enlightenment philosophy calls this the scandal of particularity. This idea, but you know, what about the rest of us? You know, why would God just put his attention on one, this exclusive one person, one nation? And so if you read this and you are wondering about God, but why this exclusivity, this particularity? I think when we come to this part of the story, where God now focuses his attention on a people, we mustn't, I think, to fully understand this scandal, if you will, in inverted commas, of particularity, we will fully understand that when we forget or when we remember that it was always meant for ultimate inclusivity, for universal inclusivity. In other words, that Abram was blessed to be a blessing to all. His descendants, his people will be blessed to be a blessing. We mustn't lose sight that this narrow focus was always ultimately about, I'm going to put my eyes on you and my hand upon you, and I'm going to bless you so that you can take that and draw the other nations to me. It's not just about you. It's about all. Okay, I want you to notice something here, which is interesting. So at the end of chapter 11, we read about Abram. Because we think, okay, but why him? Just this random guy. But I want you to notice something interesting. Maybe you already knew this, but then let me share with you. At the end of chapter 11, we're told that Abram is from Ur of the Chaldeans. Right? Do you remember that? Ur of the Chaldeans, Mesopotamia. I don't know if you know where that is. Here's a fun fact for you. Abram, from Ur of the Chaldeans, Mesopotamia, was in fact in the heartbeat of Babylon. You remember what we said last week? We spoke about how in Bible language and in Bible understanding and in Bible terms, Babylon is always representative of this kind of ultimate declaration of independence of humanity against God's rule and God's kingdom. It is this ultimate a symbol, if you will, Babylon, of we are God, we know best, we will do our own thing, we are the authors of our own story. Babylon has always been symbolic of that. So can you see what's happening? In the most incredible, overwhelmingly redemptive move of God, I love this. God picks a guy from the heartbeat of this rebellious stance, this rebellious nation, this idolatrous people. God chooses a guy from the epicenter of that, and he says, I'm going to use him to draw the nations back to me. Isn't that so cool? I love that. I don't know if you knew that, but it's pretty cool. So in Genesis 12, verse 4, we read this. So Abram went as the Lord had told him. So he went as the Lord told him, a simple sentence. But just speaking of this ultimate obedience, speaking of somebody who hears this echo of Eden, where are you? Who will respond? As we move further east of Eden, where are you? Where are you, my image bearers? Will somebody say yes? Will somebody answer? And in Abraham, we have a yes, here I am. Will you go? Yes, I will go. I'm going to get back to this. But so let's just say, so God's stunning plan is to pick this person. And Abram says yes. And he says, go. And he goes. This wonderful plan that God has. And I will turn you into a great nation. And we're going to build a new nation. It's going to be light to the nations of the earth and draw all people back. I mean, it's a great plan, but also a little bit crazy. Why is it crazy? Well, Abram's 75. His wife, Sarai, and then Sarah later, can't have kids. I mean, this is going to be a pretty tiny nation. This is a crazy plan. And God makes a promise, and I'm sure Abram was like, God, but can I just introduce you to my wife? I'm not sure, do you know my age? Are you sure you've got the right guy? I mean, this is a great plan. I mean, I want to be turned into a great nation, but this is going to be a problem. Something wrong with your plan. But he goes and he says yes, nonetheless. Even though the things don't make sense and he can't see how this is going to work out. But he says, okay, God, here we go. Let's do it. But now here comes the problem. Now he has to wait. And you know how good we are at waiting. You know how much we love waiting. God gives me a promise. And tomorrow morning, if that promise is not fulfilled, it's like, God, where are you? What's going on? And he waits. And he waits. 10 years he waits. And you can imagine this time now, all the doubts and the anxiety and the fear and the questioning. What's going on? Where are you, God? What's going to happen? And then God speaks again. Now we're at Genesis 15, and he hears this voice again. And God speaks again. Chapter 15, verse 1. Oh, what a verse. Can I make you to make this verse your verse for the week? Genesis 15, verse 1. Make this your verse for the week. Let me read it for you. Pray and meditate on this verse this week. Here it is. So God says, so 10 years later, this guy's still waiting for this great nation. He's got no kids. Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield. And here we go. I am your very great reward. Do you know what's happening here? Do you know what's going on here? God is trying to teach Abram a beautiful lesson about who God is and waiting for the promises of God. God's saying, were you waiting for this thing that I promised you? But I just want you to understand that it's not about the thing I promised you. It's not about the descendants. It's not about sons and daughters. It's not about the stuff I'm going to do for you. It's about me. I am your reward. Can we just first get that sorted out? It's about our relationship. It's about you and me. It's about who you are to me and who I am to you. Presence before promise, if you want to put a little tagline to it. Presence before promise. It's about the relationship. It's not about the stuff that God's going to give you or do for you. It's about who he is to you and who you are to him. And so in this verse here, he's saying, I am your reward. I love you so much. I want to be in a relationship with you so much. This comes first. I want you to know that I'm your reward, and I want you to appreciate that and understand that. It's like God saying, listen, Abram, I can't give you the fulfillment, the fullness of the promise that I made you before I've given you myself. That's a beautiful thing that's happening right there. And the rest of chapter 15, we understand this, because from there we go into this whole covenant thing that happens. Promise without presence is missing the point. Abram responds in verse 2 of chapter 15. We're going to put it up on the screen there. Verse 2, I'm going to paraphrase that for you. Lord, I know you said you love me, and I really want to be with you, but I'm not sure that you're going to come through for me. I'm not so sure. You made promises. It's been a long time, and I know you say you love me, but I have my doubts. That's what's going on in verse 2. And so much so, God then says, okay, listen. I mean, Abraham says to God, okay, God, can I make a suggestion? Can I help you out? Can I maybe show you how this could go? I don't have kids. Eliezer is in my household. Use him. He can be the fulfillment of that promise. Anyone here ever tried to help God out? Make a few suggestions to God. God, I think this, if you do this, then I think this is going to be the best way to do it. But what I love about God, God could have gone, okay, great, you know, let's do that. What I love about God is saying, no, I have promised you the best. I have promised you your own descendants. I've got the fullness and the best for you. It's almost like God saying, I'm not going to let you settle for second best. I love that. So God responds, as he always does, with patient love. I love that about God. And in verse 5, this happens of chapter 15. He took him outside. Can you imagine it? This despondent guy, he's coming up with plan B, C, and D, trying to help God out. God kind of puts his arm around him. So listen, Abram, let's go outside. Let's go for a walk. And he takes him outside and he says, look up at the sky. Count the stars, if you could indeed even count them. And then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And I can imagine his heart just skipped a beat and he's all excited again. And he's looking up and he's like, yes, go boy. It's like, this is going to be fantastic. And then we read in verse 6 and it says, and he trusted God. He believed God. Again, his heart was stirred. And don't we just so often need to be encouraged again? Kind of just get plugged in again and just boost that battery again. And I think that's what was happening there for him. It's so important, friends, that we ask ourselves, what needs to happen? Where do I need to go? What do I need to do? Who do I need to spend time with? What do I need to read? What needs to go on in my life that will give me that, here we go again. I'm ready. I'm enthused. I'm encouraged again. My glass is full again. This is what happened here. And he believed again. He said, okay, right, we've waited a long time, but I believe and I'm going to trust God. And it says in verse 6, and it was credit to him as righteousness. What is righteousness? Well, this verse helps us understand what righteousness is. It is just that full and complete trust in the goodness of God, even though I can't see how it's going to go, how it's going to happen, what it means for my future. I'm just surrendering in full obedience and trust. God, I don't know and understand. I can't figure it out. I've made suggestions. You're not listening, but still, you've got a different plan. I don't get it, but still, I surrender fully to your goodness. And what that verse is telling us, that is the basis, the foundation for being in a right relationship with God. Righteousness. Saying, God, I don't know, but I trust you. And then what happens in the rest of chapter 15? We're going to do in 2 weeks' time. We have this most beautiful love moment. This like we saw with Yura and Nicole, this kind of bending down on a knee and proposing almost. We have this proposal. We have this marriage, this love ceremony, this beautiful, the Bible uses the word covenant. It's an old-timey word, but there really is no better English word for it. We're going to talk about it in 2 weeks' time. This idea of covenant and what it means to be in covenant relation with God. But what's happening here is God is saying, Abram, I want to be in relationship with you. I want to get engaged to you, as it were. I want to be married to you in that sense. I want to be in relationship, in covenant, contract, this union. And so we have this ceremony, this covenant that God now makes with Abraham. This incredible moment where God bounds himself to Abraham. This kind of you are mine and I am yours moment. This incredible love moment. The rest of this chapter. I'm going to skip that. Carry on with the story a little bit now. Because this is so important. Genesis chapter 15. I want to go so far as to say to you that if you really want to understand the heart of the God story, before we carry on, you need to understand Genesis 15. It is so pivotal. It's so fundamental. It is so important to understand covenant. What it is, what it's about. Because we're going to come across this idea of covenant. And so, not next week. Next week, I'm finishing Abram's story. The week after, hear me now. The week after, in many ways, I'm pausing the sermon series. And I'm talking about covenant. What does covenant mean? What really happened between Abram and God on that day? And later in Deuteronomy with God and Moses. And in many ways, later, Jesus on the cross. What is this covenant idea about? We're going to focus just on that. I'm going to talk covenant, what it means, and also, I think we've deep enough into the story, so that'll be our pause Sunday. As I'm talking about covenant, I'm also going to invite you on that day. It's going to be a recommitment Sunday. It's going to be a Sunday to just say again, God, count me in. Covenant, I want it. I understand it. I want it. I want to be part of that. So prepare your heart now already. A moment of recommitment, a moment of rededication again to your relationship with God. It's going to happen in 2 weeks' time. Okay, so we have this incredible moment where God and Abram, I'm yours, you are mine, and this great love story. And this, we have this beautiful thing happening. Oh, boy. But it didn't take long after this incredible covenant moment, after this beautiful engagement ceremony, if you will, for lack of a better description, that takes place in Genesis 15, that we are reminded of how deeply flawed we are and how deeply sinful we are and selfish we are and how much we love to be the author of our own stories. Because what happens is Abram eventually gets to a point where he's like done waiting. It's like, God, listen, I really don't actually think you know what you're doing. And I mean, I love you, but I'm going to help you out. And so Abram and his wife, Sarai, they kind of make a plan and say, okay, listen, here's what you do. I'm going to give you my Egyptian servant girl, Hagar. I mean, because there's just no other way. I mean, I'm old because now they, at least in their deep 80s, can't have kids anyway when I was young, so never mind now. And so here's what you do. I'm going to give you my Egyptian slave girl, Hagar. You sleep with her and, let's help God out. And this happens. And 9 months later, Ishmael is born. And then we enter a period in the story of Abraham where Abraham had to learn that actions have consequences. And the difficulty he got himself into and the trouble he caused for others around him, that so often is true in our own lives. When we take a word from God and we don't submit to God's timeline and God's way, but we want to push those doors down. God hasn't opened the door yet, but we feel it needs to be open, and we push that door down and we make our own plan and we see the consequences of that. And Abraham had to learn this lesson. I'm going to end the sermon in this part. We're going to finish the story of Abraham next week and then covenant. But I want to say this. In the story of what happens now, God's just declared his love for Abraham. Beautiful ceremony. Not long after that, Abraham does his own thing. Makes his own plan. Disobedient again. Moves east of Eden. As it were, symbolically speaking. In this moment with Hagar and Ishmael, and Abram and Sarah, we learn two things. From Abram's side, we learn this as we continue with the story. From Abram's side, here's the lesson. If you are the perpetrator, if you will, if you moved in an easterly direction from Eden, sticking with our symbolism, if you're the one who have gone astray, found yourself down an alley and you got yourself stuck and there are crocodiles and hippos all over the place, if you remember last week's story. That's Abraham in this part. And the thing that we learn in his story as we carry on is just that God works redemptively through our mistakes. And can I just remind you of that today? That crafty old serpent, make no mistake, he's going to try and cash in when you've messed up. And he's going to whisper all kinds of lies into your ear. You are useless. You're a failure. You always have been. You always will be. You've made this mistake, not just once, but thousands of times, and you're never going to change. You're always going to do it. And he will lie constantly, causing you to doubt your identity as his image bearer and trap you in what? What are those two things? Shame and fear. And in this part of Abraham's story, he messed up. But as we carry on with the story, you'll see how God works redemptively through our mistakes. That is the nature and character of God. Even when we mess up, God can redeem our mistakes and fulfill his mission and purposes for our lives. Can I just remind you of that? From Hagar's side and Ishmael's side, what we learn here is, I mean, here is somebody who was on the receiving end of Abraham's abuse of power and sinfulness. She was at the receiving end. She was the victim here. I mean, she was just a slave girl, and she was forced against her will to sleep with him. And so in many ways, but she was abused. It was an absolute abuse of power. And she found herself in this place where this is not of my own making. And it could so easily have been in the story where Hagar and Ishmael just kind of disappeared off, and we just don't read of them from the next verse on. And they just slip away. Just the consequence of Abraham's sin. But they don't. If you go and read the rest of the story here, we see how God just absolutely, because eventually Hagar said, I can't live like this anymore. I'm living in such an abusive environment. I'm going to take my kid. I'm going to go. We're going to get out of here. And she flees into the desert. And what I love here is how everybody matters in God's story. Everybody matters. And so if you're sitting here today, having been at the receiving end of someone else's sinfulness, if I can put it that way, your story matters to God. Your suffering matters to God. And so what happens in the story, as she flees into the wilderness, God pursues her, and we hear that echo of Eden. Where are you? Where are you? And in fact, the story becomes so important. It is through her and this story that we have for the very first time this beautiful name of God revealed to us. El Roy. It's here where it happens for the first time. El Roy. But you know what it means? God sees me. The God who sees. The God who sees me. Can I just say to you today, if you're hiding under a tree in the middle of the desert, God sees you. God is the Redeemer of all, and your story matters to Him, and your life has a place in God's story. Amen? Yeah. Next week, we're going to wrap up Abraham quickly, and then the week after, be ready. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be great. Covenant. Let me pray for us, and then we're going to close our service. Before I pray, you know what was beautiful about when Abraham said yes to God? This is a bonus for at the end of the sermon. This is the end of sermon bonus. You know when he said yes to God, and God said, go where I show you, and he said yes, and he went. Do you know where he went? Canaan. Do you know what direction Canaan is from where he was? West. Oh yeah, that's cool, right? So for the first time, generation after generation, moving east of Eden, we have somebody who says, okay, let's go back west. I love it. Amen.
Thank you for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. See you next time.